You want to talk about that?
Sure, we can talk about it.
All right, I'm ready to
go. Yeah?
Yeah, why not?
All right, here we go. This is episode 6 of the RVA Ram News VCU Basketball Podcast. I'm Ross Catro.
And I'm Aaron Williams.
And this episode, we're going to talk about Stony Brook, George Mason. We'll do trivia, 3 questions this time. And then we'll probably dip into George Washington, because I think that game will happen before we'll have another show up. So let's just dive right in and talk about Stony Brook.
It fit the script of most of VCU's recent games. It was pretty close there at the beginning. VCU couldn't score in the half court. They were forcing lots of turnovers, but not necessarily capitalizing on them. Then they go on a 19-0 run and blow Stony Brook, a very, very good team, just out of Siegel Center.
Is this a tournament team, Stony Brook?
Yeah, I think they'll definitely... They're going to have to win their conference tournament, the American East tournament, but they're definitely the best team in that conference this year. Jameel Warren he doesn't really have a great game against VCU, but he's the real deal.
Yeah, it was a 9 p.m. tip-off, which we had talked about maybe being we didn't really know whether there was going to be an issue, and it seemed like totally not an issue at all.
Yeah, it didn't seem like it at all. Maybe for the media at the venue.
A little late night for everyone, maybe?
Yeah.
Writing your recap?
Yeah.
College
well,
o'clock.
I don't have a print deadline, so...
Yeah. It was close during that in the first half, and then the second half they kind of did this thing that they're doing this year, right?
Right. Well, at least recently, yeah.
Yeah, recently.
I think Chris Crowley made a pretty good comment about the slow starts chart that we were doing at the beginning of the year, and it's like... They would start slow and then put together one of these runs to, like, come back and make it competitive. And now they're keeping it close and then going on these runs.
To put it out.
Just blowing teams away.
Yeah, I saw Scott Day, I think, had another chart, which we should start collecting these charts. They've been really good in the last couple of weeks.
He's really stepped up his infographic game.
Yeah, I love it, man. I love these things. And this one was runs of, I think, double-digit runs. And
yeah,
it was at least...
Every single... It was, like, the biggest stretch... The biggest scoring run that VCU went on where they scored at least 10 points and the opponent scored less than 5 points.
Yeah.
And I think every single game that he put on there had like a plus 10 run. So plus 10 run over it. You know, pretty impressive.
Yeah, and definitely these last couple games were included for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So let's maybe talk a little bit individually about Briante Weber and Stony Brook, who I always want to call Stony Point. I swear I've typed Stony Point like 10 times in this past
They're
week.
They're the official basketball team of the...
of the outdoor
fashion
mall.
Park, yeah. Briante Weber had a brilliant game. 2 maybe not great 3-point attempts early in the game. I think he's down to 6% from 3-point range now. But other than that, he played a brilliant game. His stat line is just worth saying. 14 points on 3 of 7 shooting, but 3 of 5 from 2-point range. 8 of 9 from the 3-3 line. 9 assists, 0 turnovers. He had 3 rebounds, 7 steals, with only 2 personal fouls, and just an all-around brilliant game.
And that's what we're looking for, and we were looking for earlier in the season, right? He's hitting his free throws, he's not fouling, he's assisting the crap out of the ball, and still, like, 7 steals is a heck of a lot of steals.
It's a ton of steals. It was 6, and I'll talk about Chris Quill again, and... I don't know if Scott Day does all the stats, but he did one, and I think he might have missed it. And Chris Crowley tweeted at him. and sure enough, I looked back at the box score, and it went from 6 to 7. It was a clear steal for Briante, but I thought that was pretty funny. So one day when we're looking back at the media guide, and we see that gaudy number that Briante Weber finishes with, that last one... He gets an assist from Chris Crowley. But, yeah, I mean, it's everything you want from Briante Weber, just dominant on both sides of the basketball. And good scoring. I mean, he doesn't have to take a lot of shots, but 8 of 9 from the free throw line. So.
Yeah, and to me, he looks way more comfortable.
Yeah.
Well, as I mean, the point guard.
It's tough to forget that, you know, Darius Theus was such a rock and everything, but there was a learning curve in the 2011 and the 12 year, and hopefully... You know, that's what Briante Weber is going through now, and his best basketball is undoubtedly ahead of him.
It's hard for me to remember that dude has like a whole another year.
Yeah,
like he's not a senior, and because I guess the last couple, like, these guys have been their senior year and then they're gone, and he'll be here again
right.
for a whole year, which is going to be fun to watch, I think.
Yeah, you know, Coach Smart was talking about that on Monday, and I think it was Monday, about the impact that freshmen have, you know, and there are very high expectations for guys like Jordan Burgess, but it's tough as a freshman to put it together, and during Coach Smart's tenure, Briante Weber's probably one of the biggest impact freshmen that he's had. I mean, you think about it, I think he played 19 or 20 minutes that year per game in that 2011-12 year, and just the statistics he put up were pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Compared to, I don't even know who comes to mind is to even really being able to compete with that.
Yeah, I guess Rob kind of played a little bit as a freshman.
Mm-hmm. And Trayvon Graham, I mean, scored 250 points. Melvin Johnson scored a lot of points, but Bronto Weber was such a force on defense.
And like we've talked about, he is the face of Havoc. And he probably was the face of Havoc last. I mean, there was other face of Havoc, but when
right.
we talked about defense and steals, it was still Briante Weber.
People in the national media have been talking about him since his freshman year.
Yeah.
Just as being this on-ball menace.
Do you know how, like, so was he highly recruited by anyone other than VCU?
No.
Is that just because, well, do you know anything about that, his recruiting story?
No. Not, I mean, he's two-star. He wasn't even very high up in VCU's class. I mean, when he came to campus, people weren't necessarily freaking out about him. But it just took seeing him on the court to understand that how well he fits Havoc. Like, I can't imagine him, like, I don't know that he would necessarily be a successful
playing
for George Mason.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess they press some, but it's, like, the perfect fit for him. And Coach Smart did a really good job of, like, finding him and then turning him into this, like, really special, unique weapon.
Yeah, it'll be cool to see how that changes now that some of the recruits in the recruiting classes are top 100 players
mm-hmm.
and that sort of thing. How that vibe changes, or if it changes at all, and if we'll still find those kind of guys who are built specifically for Coach Smart's system, or if we're going to be seeing more of these like just really skilled athletes.
From what I see in recruiting, I think it's not necessarily, let's just go for like the highest rated guys. He's done a really, really good job of finding players that I think have specifically the physical tools, but also the games to fit so well. You know, I mean, Justin Tillman, he's getting all these guys that it's just speed. You know, now they have a little bit of size, a little more scoring punch than the guys he's gotten before. But I think he's really recruiting players that fit Havoc well, which is kind of cool. But also, you got to realize that those ratings are kind of silly. To some extent, because a lot of it's based on who's offering and what schools people commit to.
Mm-hmm.
And so those recruits are also getting a bump from the fact that VCU is a much more high-profile school now.
Yeah.
So these could have been guys that Coach Smart got before the Final Four run, before three straight NCAA tournament appearances, but they're getting that boost just because VCU is a big-name school now.
Yeah, recruiting's fascinating to me. Yeah, I'll be excited to see where it goes and how it changes. It's maybe a thing. Maybe I'll follow more. I don't know. It seems like a rabbit hole you could kind of fall down.
Yeah.
And be really, really into recruiting. And then it makes me feel weird a little bit because you're really, really into recruiting. And, like, it's already weird that we're really into college sports and these dudes are, like, 18-year-old kids.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're into recruiting, then you're into, like, 15-year-old kids.
Well, maybe earlier.
Yeah.
I mean,
it sounded weird to say out loud. Not,
yeah. Well, I mean, you've got a team like Indiana. I think they've gotten verbal commitments from two 8th graders in the past 5 years.
Yeah, that's
8th
crazy.
8th graders.
Do they pan out? Do those dudes pan out? Or?
Well, one decommitted at Kentucky, and I think the other one committed when he's in 8th grade, and he decommitted, looked around, and then recommitted, and now he's sort of the flagship of his class. But, I mean, these are guys who committed, you know, well before VC went to the Final Four, and they're still not even at this school yet.
Right.
I can't imagine that. I think it is a rabbit hole. I do think that this class is really exciting, but I like to spend most of my time focused on the here and now. I think it's a little unfair to get like too caught up in the future when we have all these great personalities and basketball players here.
Totally. And especially it sounds like maybe But the transfer rules are, like, a little bit insane now. It sounds like, I saw you post a thing that the transfer rules might be changing a little bit.
Right, yeah.
And so that'll kind of make your class a little bit more stable. Like, the thing that I kind of dislike is, it is, like, you fall in love with this guy, you learn a lot about this guy, and then, like, he's gone in a second because of the rules. And
yeah, you know, we shouldn't talk about this the entire podcast, but I think it'd be great if they changed that rule. You know, VCU's been very lucky in the sense that they've basically had, you know, one guy transfer out every year. You know, Coach Smart always oversigns by one guy and then transfer out and everything. You've got other schools where it's much crazier, you know, and it can be stressful. You can do a really good job, you know, and then you can have a player who enters not looking that good, has an incredible season, and then he's in the NBA, and then you have no post player, or you have no point guard, or you have no shooting guard, and then all of a sudden your entire season can be ruined because of, it's just this weird, there's probably some pretty interesting, like, game theory in there between, like, because you can't offer to everyone.
Yeah.
Because then you oversign your class too much, and you're doing, I mean, it's just, it's a silly system, and hopefully it'll change some.
Yeah, that was a tangent. That was my fault. Tangent. I wanted to talk about, back to Stony Brook. I wanted to talk about Jonte Redick a little bit, and hear you talk about Terrence Shannon, too.
Yeah, well, if we're talking about transfers, we can talk about VCU's graduate school transfer, Terrence Shannon. I think he was awesome. He only shot 2 of 6 in the field, but there was a stretch there early in the second half where it was the best I'd ever seen him play. I don't even know how to, like, really quite put it into words, but he was just involved in every single play, and his motor was unreal, and it seemed like he would make a mistake, and it wouldn't even matter before you could even realize he made a mistake. He was 94 feet down the court making a play on the other side of the ball.
That's awesome.
And so we talked about this in the last podcast about how, you know, I mean, Shannon was put in a situation where some people would pack up their bags and go home and be done with it. I mean, he came here to play, and he got put in a position where he wasn't playing that much. And instead, he worked really, really hard in practice, which I mentioned. So they have this thing called the effort chart, and it measures 15 positive metrics and 2 negative metrics, and you get a score. And Coach Smart was saying, you know, 8 to 12 is maybe a good score. 15, you're having a really good day. And 2 days before that game, Terrence Shannon set a record with a 31.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And so it speaks a lot to his character. I mean, he had a chance where he could have, like, packed up his bags, or some people would have packed up their bags and gone home. And instead, you know, he said, no, I want to play. I want to be part of this team. And it started in practice, and it clearly carried over into the game.
And I hope it keeps continuing over, man. That guy has I think he can be invaluable to conference play.
Absolutely, because I mean, it's people talk about it all the time. VCU can play big, they can play small. You know, their pressure defense has been so good, but a huge part of these past 4 wins has been just their 2-point defense. I mean, it started in that Virginia Tech game when it seemed like Tech couldn't do anything around the rim.
Yeah.
And I just remember Javonte Redick and Mo Alie-Cox and Terrence Shannon, these bodies just pushing people around. And I think he adds so much muscle and experience to that front court that it really gives them something that they haven't had in a long time.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see how that trickles down to players like Mo, because Mo was so hot for a while Shannon was out, and then it seemed like Coach Smart thought maybe his like brain got in the way a little bit of what was going on, and maybe this gives him a chance now to, like, get back to that role, kind of like you always talk about, like, the players who aren't the like that group of whatever 8 or whatever that Coach Smart wants to play. They still need to have a role. They need to be able to come in and do their job real well. And so when you have someone like Shannon who's putting in better minutes now, hopefully it, like, trickles down to those dudes too, you know?
Right. And I think that's, you know, Coach Smart talks about that, the 6-11. You know, VCU struggle with those guys maintaining their roles. And I think that's one of the dangers of playing with an 11-man rotation.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, everybody the other night was like, where's Mo Alie-Cox? Where's Mo Alie-Cox? Well, Terrence Shannon's playing now. He's having a great night. You gotta let him ride. And, you know, there are only 200 minutes in a game that can go around. So with the 11-man rotation, some people are going to have quiet nights, and I think it requires a lot of maturity from the players and an ability to impact the game whenever you get on the court. And he did a really good job of that, and hopefully that's contagious, because they need that from everyone. They need Melvin Johnson to come in and score whenever he's on the court. Just come in and score. They need Jaquan Lewis to come play great point guard work. You know, they need Jared Guest to come grab a few boards. Every single player from that 6-11 range, they're not so Allen wrenches, but they need to affect the game like Allen wrenches. Come in, play good defense, and then do that one thing.
Right.
And I'll say one last thing about Terrence Shannon. He had the two best post feeds of the night. The box score only says one assist, but I'm telling you, I watched him with the two best post feeds of the night. Things that Bronte Weber and Jake Columbus were not capable of doing.
Yeah.
And it's really cool because Coach Smart's offense doesn't usually run with a big man, you know, the it's not a high post offense ever. You know, it's usually like ball screen work or feed the post. And there are like two plays where he's just operating from the top of the key, and it was really fun to watch. So I hope they do that, especially against his own offense. It'd be cool to see them do a little bit more of that.
And is that because he hasn't had the talent at that spot to run that sort of thing, or is that just not his thing?
I think he was just there. It was one of those things, you know, kind of like half transition, half off court, half court, mm-hmm. kind of a mix between the two, and he just was like there and just had these little, probably the two best passes of the game. So it's cool to see him do that, you know, of all people.
Let's see. Any thoughts on Javante?
Yeah, I mean, he had a good game. He's, you know, he's so efficient scoring.
Yeah.
He only took 8 shots.
But and one was kind of a as the clock ran out, 3. He took a 3, didn't he?
He did. I can't remember if it was as the clock ran out. I mean, he did a good job of getting out on the perimeter some.
Yeah.
And he hit a couple mid-range jumpers that were just so smooth. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. I sat next to an NBA scout who's there to see him and Trayvon Graham, basically. He's taking notes on him. It'll be interesting to see what happens to him.
Yeah.
He's so efficient, but I think he still needs to be a bigger part of that offense.
Right. Any other thoughts? Another slowish start for Trayvon and then a real hot second half?
Yeah, he's 0-4 with 3 turnovers and 2 fouls in the first half. And I think I joked that he was going to come out and score 18 points in the second half. He scored 16. You got it going from 3-point range. You got it going in the lane.
Yeah, he does it. He likes to prove me wrong. I think I was watching the game with Valerie, and I said out loud, man, I don't think Trayvon hit a single bucket in the first half. And then instantly he had like 5 points in 10 seconds or whatever.
He had the first 5 points of the second half, which was huge because, I mean, basically that was points 3 through 8 of that 19-0 run.
Yep.
And then he scored those points really quickly, and then they sort of had this really interesting lineup of like all role players that got a standing ovation. It was really cool to see. Like, it was who was the one starter? I think it was Rob and 4 other bench players that just manhandled Stony Brook. Necessarily wasn't the biggest offensive punch or anything like that, but Stony Brook just looked totally lost against this sort of bizarre lineup that I've never seen before, and I think people really clued into that. And a lot of that had to do with Terrence Shannon playing like a maniac, but they had this great energy, and it's fun to see, and people picked up on that. So it's always cool to see that kind of thing happen.
Smart fans, man. I like when fans have good, smart awareness. It's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Anything else about Stony Brook? Jaquan played, I think, his fewest minutes in a long time. He played 11 minutes, fewest since Northeastern, but I mean it's just as a result of probably Briante playing an incredible game, right?
Some of that. I mean, he had 3 fouls in the game, and you know, that definitely impacted his ability to affect the game. But you know, it's one of those things. Like, it's not. I mean, 3 fouls hurts, but like, it's not that Mo'Ali Cox and Jaquan Lewis had like terrible games. It's not that they're in the doghouse. It's not that they necessarily had bad practice. It's just VCU had these other guys that were having big nights, which is exciting.
Yeah, totally.
But it also requires coaching and good player maturity to make that work.
Yeah, and I'm a fan of, obviously, like, I'm a fan of that kind of program. It's cool. That's cool that that's a part of VCU. Like, mm-hmm. I'm glad we're not a, you know, super blue chip recruit, one and done kind of. You guy are the point. You're our whole entire team, one guy. It's nice to see a team, you know?
That, and it's cool for the players that get to come here because, you know, I mean, some schools, I remember, you know, some schools play 7 guys.
Yeah.
And then you have 6 guys that sit on the bench plus walk-ons, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's cool that, like, almost, you know, I mean, it's cool that even, like, Emerson Burke came in and grabbed 2 rebounds.
And dude almost got fouled. Yeah.
He got fouled.
Yeah.
He should have gotten his first career points. You know, it's cool that the last walk-on, the freshman walk-on, you know, can even get chances to play and affect, you know, tally some stats.
Well, and it was cool to see the rest of the team was really, really excited about...
Well, everyone Anderson. In the stadium was. Yeah. He comes into the game and people freak out.
Yeah.
You know, and then he grabs that defensive rebound, and he grabs that offensive rebound. You know, people are freaking out because they think he got fouled. I mean, that's just fun. And it gets back to that thing that we were talking about, how, you know, there are cool personalities and there are cool stories and there's good basketball players here now in the moment to,
yeah,
to like tap into. So, do you want to talk George Mason?
Yeah, let's do it.
So, I mean, this is fun for a lot of people that have been around VCU basketball for a while. I wrote an article I wasn't necessarily too excited about. George Mason joined the A-10. I think, you know, they've got the worst record in the A-10 right now. So maybe that article wasn't totally unjustified. But VCU and George Mason have had some great memories together, you know, for both sides.
Yeah.
And so it is cool to get to play them again. Especially, I mean, I was looking at their last season. They played each other in the first game they play. I mean, all three were memorable games. The first one's that Valentine's Day game where they hit four shots in the final, I think 58 seconds,
yep,
to including a half-court three-pointer by their
at
current,
the buzzer.
At the buzzer to win, to come back and win. It was a more incredible comeback, I think, than the Richmond comeback last season.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the next game they play is when Bradford Regis goes off for 31 points right after George Mason, you know, sort of interrupts his...
His
senior day presentation. You know, one of my favorite moments from that game is Andre Cornelius had gotten in trouble for credit card fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And so George Mason decided to keep him, and he's playing that game. And I can't remember the exact chant, but, you know, Andre Cornelius enters the game, and, you know, the rowdies start going crazy, and they're chanting something at him. And he comes down, takes his first shot, and it's this terrible air ball. You know, and so then... The next game, it's the semifinals of the CAA tournament. It's the last time VCU played them. And, you know, VCU opens up the game on a 22-0 run.
Yep.
You know, 32-4 is what it ended up being. And George Mason storms back and makes it interesting. So, I mean, that's post-Larenaga three games that they've played against each other that are all interesting.
Right.
So I think it's cool from that angle, but I don't think George Mason... This is a terrible matchup for them. They... are incredibly bad about turning over the ball. I think they're 308th nationally in turnovers. They foul like crazy. And they just don't have the tools to be able to handle havoc at all.
Okay. So you're not worried. You're feeling good.
I'm feeling good, but they also have some wild cards.
Yeah.
So it's not a lot of familiar faces. If you haven't followed George Mason since the last time they played, you're not going to recognize many people outside of Sherrod Wright and maybe Eric Copes. Sherrod Wright's an interesting guy, though, because he's a wild card. He's an incredible scorer. He started off this season. I've got the stats here. The first the first eight games, he averaged 17.5 points per game while shooting 48% from the field. You know, I think like 40-something percent from three-point range. The next five games, he averaged 6 points per game while shooting 19% from the field.
Yeah, and they lost... How many of those? Four of those, I think.
Yeah. So they started 4-0, and since then they're 3-7. So they're 7-7. So worst record there. And so then they lost to Old Dominion the other night, which was their losses before that weren't that bad. They lost to Old Dominion, which is a bad loss. And he had 25 points, but 14 of those came on 18 free throw attempts. And so this is one of their big problems this season, is that they can't stop fouling. I've already tweeted this stat a couple times, but the two teams combined for 58 personal fouls,
yeah,
and 78 free throws. And 35 of those fouls were George Mason's. So, I mean, if they foul VCU 35 times, it's game over.
Yeah.
It's not going to be very fun for either side to watch that.
Right.
And I mean, so...
Is that any of that related to their style of play, or is it just they're young, or they're sloppy, or they're...
Well, they're not young. This is one of those things that I think I talked about this some last season with St. Joseph's. You know, before last season, everyone was talking about how St. Joseph's was going to be the best team in the A-10. They're returning all their players. They return all their players. They're going to be so good. And that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, just because you return all your starting five doesn't mean you're going to win five more conference games than the year before.
Right.
So, I mean, they finished middle of the pack in the CAA last year, and they returned everyone. And all of a sudden, I think people were even expecting them to finish middle of the pack in the A-10. And now it's looking like, you know, I think KenPom has them going 5-11, and I could totally see that because they're so. there's a team that I really like, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And they have made a decade of success out of not beating themselves. They never foul. They never turn over the ball. I mean, they lead the nation in those two stats. It's kind of like the anti-Havoc.
Right.
They play super conservatively to the point of frustrating their opponents. Whereas VCU just plays like so crazy to the point of frustrating their opponents. But they don't beat themselves. And I feel like this year's George Mason team is the opposite of that.
Yeah.
They've got good players. They've got a coach who's good enough. You know, people are giving him a really hard time. But then they turn over the ball carelessly, and they foul a lot.
Yeah. And, I mean, if you look at their wins and losses, too, like, I mean, they beat Northern Iowa, 76-70.
They
beat Rhode Island, and that's, I think, that might be the only A-10 game yet so far this season.
Well, and it doesn't count.
Oh, that's right.
It doesn't count as an A-10 game.
They had a close game with Oregon State, and then they lost to Old Dominion. Like, they're kind of all over the place. All over the place teams make me worried sometimes, but...
So, I mean, the two players I mentioned, Sherrod Wright, one. So he could come out and hit 25 and hit a game winner and win this game.
Yeah.
You know, and go off like a maniac. Or he could have, you know, he hasn't really recovered from that slump. I think those 25 points are misleading because of the nature of that game. And then you have Eric Copes, who I think, you know, if people have followed the recruiting scene, Paul Hewitt came to town. And that's one of his first recruits is this guy who's ranked 56th in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
Great shot blocker. I think people were going, oh, man, like... like he's going to carry on the Larry Nagy tradition and really do a great job. And Copes has really struggled. 6-game suspension to start this season.
Yeah.
3-game suspension to start last season. He fouls like crazy. He's fouling 9 times per 40 minutes. But when he's on the court and he's not fouling, he's just a total mess.
Yeah.
You know, Mike Morrison was that way. You know, I think... And when I mentioned those 3 games, he fouled out of the first 2 in 20 minutes per game. Fouled out of both of them. And then that third one, he was a huge reason that they came back against VCU because he was cleaning up the offensive boards. And so, I mean, Eric Copes would be probably top 20 nationally in block percentage if he played 40% minutes. And he's their best rebounder. So, you know, if those two guys come in and they play with level heads and Sherrod Wright's hitting shots and Eric Copes is playing good defense, blocking shots, rebounding... then they can play much, much better than their record suggests.
Yeah. Well, it's at home. It's a 7 p.m. game on Thursday. You know they'll be ready to play, Mason. So it should be good. It should be a fun game to watch, I hope.
Yeah, I think no matter the outcome, no matter the score, I think people have this one circle on their calendar.
Yeah, definitely. All right, anything else you want to add about this Mason game?
No.
All right. Let's do trivia.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I've
got 3 trivia questions for you.
Okay.
I want a trivia ditty. If you can work up a trivia ditty on the saxophone, I'd be into that. Like a little intro music. Okay, question number 1. If you remember last week, I was a little worried about the 9 p.m. start against Stony Brook. But the Rams had no problem with that. They weren't worried about it. Can you name the last time the Rams lost at home when tip-off was after 9 p.m.? 9 p.m. or later.
They lost.
Mm-hmm.
Was it in 2011 season?
It was not.
It was before that?
Mm-hmm.
Then I can't.
No, that Northeastern game in 2009. That was a...
Oh, man.
So it's really interesting because in my mind, we talked about it last week, in my mind, there's some like big, like... terrible losses with these late tip-offs, but they're all away. There's Alabama was an away game that was after 9, but that's probably a different time zone maybe. George Mason, the Valentine's Day heartbreak, that was after 9, but that was away. That St. Louis game was away. Vanderbilt in 2008 was away. Oklahoma in 2008 was away. But Northeastern is the most recent.
We've played some close 9 p.m. tips.
Mm-hmm.
And that Richmond one was 8 p.m.
Yeah.
I went back and looked at that. Sorry if I misled anyone. Yeah.
Okay. So after 9 at home, Rams are good.
Wow.
Rams are solid.
Very good.
All right, question number 2. VCU played Georgetown and will play George Mason, and then the following game they'll play George Washington.
Mm-hmm.
How many teams in the nation play all 3 George schools during the regular season?
Oh, man. How many?
Yeah, how many?
1.
The answer is 1. Just VCU. Yep.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that one.
All right, so...
And they're all, like, in the D.C. area, too.
Yeah. I thought for sure there'd be at least one more George school.
So, yeah.
Northeastern plays Mason and VCU, but like won't play Georgetown. So I looked.
You're good with these geography ones.
I like them. I don't know why. They appeal to me for some reason.
Those are unique.
all right. So if you question number three. Throwing out the blowouts. And let's define the blowouts this season as Virginia Tech, Florida State, and Iowa State. Illinois State. Sorry. So that's Virginia Tech, Florida State, Illinois State. Do you accept those as three blowouts?
Sure.
Would you like to add any to the blowout list?
That's fine with me.
Okay. So throwing those out, how many games did VCU finish in the first half with a point differential of five or more? So that's how many games a half was a point differential either plus five or minus five or more?
They've played 15 games. So there's 12 remaining. Five or more. I'll say all but the UVA game.
They were all... Wait. The point differential was five or more. And you said...
Was the UVA game five?
No. So there have only been three games where the point differential at halftime was five or more.
Oh, it was five or more?
Yeah.
Oh, of course not, because they've all been close. No, that one was just 1 point the other night.
Yeah.
That was silly of me. Yeah, okay.
So, which is... I like this stat because it plays into my slow start or cumulative effect of habit conversation. So there were three games in their season where at halftime it was point differential of five or more. It's Boston College was five.
Okay.
Wofford was 10. And Northeastern was seven in favor of Northeastern.
Northeastern.
So I'm just going to read these all aloud because they're kind of crazy when you read them in a row. So Stony Brook was plus one. ODU was plus three. Eastern Kentucky was plus two. Belmont was plus three. Georgetown was plus one. Oh, Northern Iowa was the other one, not Northeastern. Northeastern was plus three. Long Beach State was minus one. Winthrop was plus four. UVA was minus two. So, like...
That's a really good stat, too.
The vast majority of these games are under five-point differential at halftime. And I still think... I know we talk about this all the time, but I still am unclear as to whether that's... really is cumulative effective havoc, or if it's slow start by VCU. I think it's harder to argue cumulative effective havoc when Trevion Graham scores 0 points in the first half. Like,
yeah,
if that guy scores six in the first half, none of those numbers are true anymore, you know? So I don't know. I think it's worrisome a bit when we move into the A-10 schedule. I think it'll be more challenging to keep it that close at half if VCU's real cold.
Coach Smart was talking about Mike Leto's saying, I think he said something along the lines of, like, you know, VCU plays with people, like, 32 minutes a game, they pretty much play people evenly. They're a good team, but they're not great. And then it's like those last 8 minutes, they just play out of their minds.
Yep.
And I think that is what that supports. You know, I mean, like that Virginia Tech game, I guess they outscored them by 15 in the second half. But, like, you know, I mean, they didn't win by, like, scoring 3 points for every two like Virginia Tech points and just slowly building up that lead. It was like this incredible 8 minute stretch where they outscored them by 31 points, which is greater than the final margin of the game.
Yeah, and that's stressful to me. And again, you know, I always like to talk about Virginia Tech football, but like that's classic Virginia Tech football way of running a game is play to your competition and then be very, very stressed out when it leaves small room for mistakes, is all I'm saying.
But I think that's like VCU plays out of their minds, like not out of control, but just like really. It's a risky system, you know, and they can play like really risky basketball and play even with people, you know, and then and then it pays off at some points. You know, I think that with VCU's talent, they could play entirely half court and play that sort of gradual, like, outplay teams. But I think it's part of the system is, like, they'll take risks and, like, won't capitalize on them for a while but still hang even with teams.
Yeah.
So I think it's the nature. And I think as a spectator, it's very stressful, but it's incredibly exciting.
Yeah, and you know, like, I feel like it's a basketball thing to say where you say something like, you know, like, the run's coming. Like, you can feel, like, they're going to go on a run, too. But for VCU, it really is. I think it's more true than just a dumb basketball thing to say. Like, the run is coming, I just wish that I would start. We'd start with it, you know?
Yeah. I wish VC would go on 31-0 runs in the first quarter of a game, every game. Of course I do.
So that was my stats. Those are
good stats.
Yeah. Do you want to talk real briefly about Commonwealth Power Rankings? This week was really interesting.
It was
Virginia
insane
basketball,
this week.
I thought.
It was probably the toughest one that I've ever had to vote on. I don't know if it felt that way for you.
I felt number one is clearly VCU, best basketball team in the state, by far.
For a long time. I mean,
and then immediately after that, I was unsure for 2 and 3. I ended up saying Richmond is the second best basketball school in the Commonwealth because they played Florida, number 12 Florida, so well and so close for the vast majority of that game, deep into 35 minutes. And then just couldn't pull it off.
Their losses aren't bad. I mean, their losses are in Minnesota, who's doing really well in the Big Ten. UNC, Wake Forest, who just beat UNC. Ohio, who's really good. And the Ohio one was an OT, and the Wake Forest one was an OT. So I
put them above Virginia because although Virginia did beat...
I put them at Virginia, too, yeah.
Yeah. Virginia had a terrible loss to Tennessee, but with a win over Florida State. So I feel like you could swap those two teams, and it would be fine. And then on the final results for the Commonwealth Power Rankings, Virginia Tech's 4, which I think is undeservedly high.
You want to talk about that?
Sure, we can talk about it. I think that if our rubric is quality of basketball being played at the moment, their quality
with
of
an
basketball...
asterisk.
Sure. Sure, with some context built around that. But, like, Virginia Tech is a bad basketball team, and their losses are rough compared to some of these other wins that the rest of the teams in the Commonwealth have.
I agree with you, but we have William Mary at 5, George Mason at 6, ODU at 7, Hampton at 8. Who's playing better than them? I agree that Virginia Tech's playing poorly, but I couldn't justify putting William Mary ahead of them right now.
Yeah, it's tough because... I mean, I agree with you, I guess, but...
Who did you put ahead of them? Because you didn't put them 4.
No, I put... I don't know, I have to pull up my thing. I think
did
I
you put Bradford
at... No, I put William Mary at 4. I did.
Okay.
I think you could make an argument for these teams after VCU, UVA, and Richmond. So, Tech, William Mary, Mason, ODU, even Hampton, and probably even Radford. You could make some sort of argument to be number 4 out of all those teams. Hampton would be maybe a little bit more challenging, but...
Well, you said that you could make a case that those teams could beat Virginia Tech right now. And I said could, italicized. But also, I mean, you got to take into account... I mean, I guess I could go for William Mary. I mean, they beat ODU without Tim Rustone. They got 2 wins in a row. Tim Rustone was sick. They finally have Brendan Britt back.
Yeah.
I think they're going to ready to, like, win a bunch of games.
Yeah, and one of the contributors for the Commonwealth Power Ranking, Eric? Was it Eric? Who's the... I think so. He had that chart of...
Oh, Jared.
Jared. Points off the bench from William & Mary, where last year they had like 3.
Right.
And this year, much more significant.
And I think something has to do with Brandon Britt's coming off the bench right now. And he'll probably go back in their starting lineup.
Right.
It's interesting, you know. So it was cool at the beginning of the season when it seemed like more teams from Virginia were doing well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of also fun when it gets a little messy and it's... Who's not as bad as this bad team?
Yeah.
I just, you know... Radford broke my heart. Former VCU coach Mike Jones down there having a great season. They were 10-4, and then they go lose by 27 points to Hampton.
And if they would have beaten Hampton, they would have been 11-4 if they are
11-4
if they would have beaten Hampton, they would be the clear number 4 team, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, 27 point loss to Hampton though.
Yeah. Rough.
JMU beat Hampton.
Yep.
So this is where it gets messy and fun.
Yeah, I like it. So check out the Commonwealth Power Rankings. And we still are, if you want to be a contributor for one of these random schools, not random schools, that's not a pejorative. It didn't really mean one of these schools that we are missing contributors for. How about that?
Yeah.
Let us know.
And follow us on Twitter at VA Power Rankings.
Yeah. At Commonwealth Power Rankings was way too long.
Way too long.
All right, so almost ready to wrap up here. Do you want to talk real briefly about George Washington?
Yeah, I'll keep it short. They're having a great season. I think they're the real deal this season. They were very, very good defensively last season and couldn't score. And then they added Maurice Creek, which I'm going to write an article, spoiler alert, It's going to be called the best story in the Atlantic 10. And it really is. Maurice Creek played for Indiana, and he was the leading freshman scorer in the country. He dropped 31 points on that Kentucky team that had John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins and all this talent. I mean, just an elite, elite scorer, and he broke his knee in a 30-point win against the Rhinos. So he's the leading scorer in the country when in a really, really good year for freshman scorers, leading freshman scorer in the country. He comes back. He plays, I think, 8 games for Indiana the next season and breaks his other knee. So he's had 2 surgeries now in under a year on a team that really, really desperately needs him. That I think they won 10 games his first season and 12 games his second season. And so he's making a comeback, and I think this is 19 months after his first one. He's finally, like, he's not playing basketball again. He's walking, though, and he's climbing up some stairs in Bloomington and tears his ACL.
Oh, man.
So 3 major injuries that all required surgery in under 24 months. So
that's awful.
He's finally a senior on that team. Last year had a lot of talent. He didn't get too much time to play. And you can tell, you look at his legs. His legs just don't have that much muscle. And he's obviously like a step slower. So he uses the graduate transfer rule and goes to George Washington. And he's having a fantastic year there. He's shooting, 54% from 2-point range and 43% from 3-point range. I believe he's their leading scorer. He's really given them a lot of. He's taken a team that could not score at all and has given them like a really big offensive punch. And so it's one of those stories where it's just like, you know, I don't care who you cheer for. You see that, and it's just. It's nice to see like someone get a second chance and be successful. This is a guy who's going to be a lottery pick.
Yeah.
And, you know, now he's playing in the A-10, but it's good to see him have at least some redemption. And he's averaging 16 points per game. He's a leading scorer.
And so that game will be Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. And it's a really big game.
At George Washington.
If they win that, then VCU will probably start getting top 25 votes again.
Cool. I did want to say one other. Did you have anything else about... I kind of cut you off. Did you want to say anything else about George Washington?
I'll get way more of the nuts and bolts in my written preview.
So you can check that out on RV News. I did want to say one more thing about the Lady Rams. We talked about them a little bit last week. They keep winning. So they've won, I think, about like a 10 trillion in a row. It's 1, 2, 3, 4.
Approximately.
Is it 11 or 12 in a row? They play Wednesday. So we're recording Tuesday. So that'll be when you're maybe listening Wednesday. So Wednesday, they'll play at LaSalle. And then Sunday, they have a big home game against St. Joseph's at 5 p.m. Sunday. It's televised on CBS Sports Network.
Okay.
Which is kind of a big deal, I feel like. I don't know. I'm still, like, very interested in Fury and what it all means. So tickets are probably, like, I think they were $7 when I looked last or something like that.
Free for students.
Free for students. So Sunday, 5 p.m., check that out.
Yeah, I mean, they're exciting. I believe they have 7 freshmen, 3rd in the nation in steals, huge offensive punch. They've got, I think it's Robin Purse is her name, just scoring like a maniac. So it's fun. If you like Havoc, you probably like Fury.
I like that. That's a good sales pitch.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else for this week?
No.
All right. So this was episode 6, RVA Ram News VCU Basketball Podcast. I'm Ross Catrow. You can find me at Ross Catrow, RossCatrow on Twitter. You can email the show at rams@rvnews.com. And this guy over here,
I'm Aaron Williams. You can follow me at AW Underground on Twitter, and follow at RVA Ram News on Twitter as well if you want all the VCU basketball updates as they happen.
Awesome. Well, go Rams.
Thanks for listening. Go Rams. Kendrick, have a dream.